Hi, I'm Kev McClure. You might remember me from some MotoGP episodes as episode 77, Don't Hate Map 8, and episode 45, Grab 'em by the Dovey. You may also remember me from such self-help videos as Smoke Yourself Thin and Get Confident, Stupid. Tonight, we'll be talking about round 3 of MotoGP 2019. Jerez, take it away, Rob. Total indictment of our public school system.
Wait, what was that? Wait, such episodes as Kevin can't count because this is actually round 4 of MotoGP at Jerez.
Correct.
What's up, guys? This is episode number 118 of MotoGP. Kev already got you the intro there. But we got some stuff to talk about at Jerez. I think number one talking point for us is the young guys versus the old fogies. But I think before that, let's actually thank our sponsors, Riders Law. So, of course, behind me.
Speaking of old fogies.
Oh, God. Oh. Well,
first of all, I don't even know what fogie means. I just threw that out there.
Wait a minute. Isn't that like the definition of a fogie? Is you not knowing what a fogie is?
Hey. ProtoGP, where we call our sponsors old and out of touch. If you'd like to sponsor us.
Oh, we're shooting ourselves in the foot here. No, so if you'd like an amazing lawyer for any legal trouble that you may be into or any legal support that you need, if you're in an accident, if you need to fight with your insurance to get to recover something, please give Riders a call.
You just reminded me, my buddy just got hit by a car on his bike today. Shout out to Brian St. Clair. If you need assistance, call Riders Law.
Brian, call Riders Law. That's riderslaw.com. Spell Riders with a Z at the end. Changing that up just a little bit.
So he had a girl in the back. It was a disaster. It disaster.
Oh, man. Yes, they're your California.
By the time Brian's done with his case, he'll be telling that insurance company, kiss my asphalt.
Ooh, dad jokes, sir. Welcome tonight.
I'm here all night, guys. Yes. I'm here all night.
Oh, loving it. Yes, no, please give them a call. Obviously, they support our sport. They have many racers in Moto America, which we will get to probably next week's episode. They're supporting me with my motorcycle racing. They support our podcast. They are all about motorcycles. Yep. So if you need any legal help, you want someone, a motorcyclist representing you for all your troubles, give them a call. Riders Law will take care of you. And as Kev has said previously, if they don't recover anything for you, there is absolutely no charge. So give them a call. They will take care of you. So let's actually start talking about motorcycle racing. Let's jump in real quick here before we spend too much time plugging stuff. I think the number one takeaway from this round is that the young racers in GP are actually starting to do something. We've got some action. We've got some action from Fabio Quartararo, Franco Morbidelli, and I mean, even we have to throw Rins and Marquez in there as well as young riders.
Let me be a Debbie Downer from Dallas for a minute here.
Already, know, like you're not even going to go positive from the first from the off. Come on.
Well, what's kind of like an ongoing trend in MotoGP every season, right? Like the first few rounds, it kind of complements almost every rider, every team, with the exception of KTM and Zarco. But that's a different story altogether. But I'm saying, look, I mean, should we legitimately get excited about the young guns being so early in the season, or?
I am actually glad that you brought this up, because every single year we talk about how the first three rounds or the flyaways that start off the season are garbage. They don't mean anything. And then when we get back to Jerez, we say that all the factories are going to dominate once again. GP is going to get back into the normal swing of things. And yet this time we get back to Jerez and something different happens. So, I mean, should we eat our words here? Or like we can't have our cake and eat it too, right? We can't complain about like it the beginning kind of not fitting every or just favoring everyone, but then also saying that the first three rounds are flyaways.
Look, I mean don't get me wrong, right? Like I'm suffering from a little bit of like the same story of fatigue in GP with Marquez, with Ducati, with Lorenzo still taking his time getting up to speed on the Honda. Yamaha still seemingly lost and like just spinning around their own tail. But I want to get excited, but I'm also trying not to get too excited about the young guns, especially not just the riders, but the team like SRT Petronas, you know?
Kev, what do you have to say about that? You're a little quiet over there.
I'm quiet to prove a point. For those like 8 people who bitch that I talk over everyone and basically own the show, look what happens when I don't talk. Dennis makes me want to fucking kill myself 4 minutes into the fucking show, and Rob can't even speak. He doesn't know what's going on. Dennis is interrupting him in the middle of the plugs with like talk with dudes first and last names, like in legal like talk about what they should. It's a total disaster if I don't take this thing over. First of all, Rob told me episode, I would say one of this season, for the first one, he wanted me to be hyped, Kev, and I decided I was not going to complain about anything this season. Not a single thing. You know why? Game of Thrones was this weekend, like it's been for the last 3 weekends, and I actually like it, but if you fucking Google anything, all you hear is people fucking bitching. Everyone wants to bitch about everything. I'm not gonna bitch that Fabio got pole and that Morbidelli got second, and they actually looked fucking dope until Fabio's gear shifter fucking broke. It was awesome. It was exciting. I don't even know who won because I won't speak that guy's name, and I don't even pay attention when he's leading. Some guy on some bike that was some color won. No one cares. I only am going to talk about Fabio and his fabulous, fantastic front row. What did we figure out it was? I'm already lost on it. Dennis and I spent an inordinate amount of time alliterating Fabio's sentences today. And I haven't done that in a long time.
Finds fluxaming finish.
Yes.
Flummox.
Yes.
Flummox? Can't even get that right.
Flummox Fabio's finish? Fantastic front row finds a flummoxing finish.
Yes.
Story of the of the week. I don't care about anyone else. I don't care about how old anyone is. I don't care about what bike they were on. I only care about the most handsome man in race business, Mr. Fabio, youngest guy to get a fucking pole in GP, breaks a record. There's a million things going on. Leads the Jerez test afterwards, breaks the lap record in the process. The kid is for rail.
And it's not like he hasn't shown these flashes of brilliance before, right? There have been times where he's been at the front of sessions, had that one lap pace. It just seemed like we got to a track where he was able to bring it all together, where other people were struggling, and he was going to benefit from all of that. And the gear shifter just had a problem with it, like or right. just it's so.
From what I understand, the little nut that holds it on place broke. So for you county keeping score out there, guys, Fabio busted his nut.
Oh my god.
Busted his nut.
And he cried over it too. It was beautiful.
Fabio busted. Hey, first of all, you're like the shyest guy I've ever met in my life. You probably cry when you bust a nut normally, let alone live on TV in front
of everyone.
Because
it's beautiful every single time.
It is beautiful. I've witnessed it 3 or 4 times in my life, and I can tell you categorically that Dennis busting his nut is up there with the Mona Lisa, the Sistine Chapel, the Great Pyramids of Giza, Mount Rushmore, Dennis busting his nut. Top 5.
Okay.
I mean, I've seen pictures of his children, but I didn't know if I was going to go that far.
Anyway, bringing it back around, Rob, remind me how old those Petronas M1 are.
They're actually probably the highest spec satellite M1s that we've seen on the grid in 10 years or so.
Really?
So it came out. Right before winter testing, that not only was Franco going to get like a factory supported M1, that Fabio was also going to get one. And we said it was just because Petronas is bringing a shit ton of money, and that's probably exactly what it is.
But that squad, the SRT squad, they're actually a new squad, right? That's not just a collection of from other teams.
Oh, I'm sure there are quite a few technicians that were from other teams, because there are just not that many people on the planet that can support a MotoGP team and tune it and get everything working well. But yeah, it's not like it's the entirety of Tech 3 Yamaha just under a different banner.
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm really surprised that they're showing this early on in the season, not just the team, but both the riders. I mean, even Morbidelli is doing, it seems to me, like better than he has since he joined the field.
I'm going to tell you one thing. I'm actually, to quote the legendary Nate Diaz, I ain't surprised, motherfuckers. But let me tell you why I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised because you don't sign two fast, charismatic, handsome young riders, back them with a fucking giant, you know, Asian oil conglomerate and expect anything less than top shelf equipment. We've said this a million times. This sport is half sport, half branding exercise. And if you look at the demographic that those dudes cover and the oil sponsor that they have and Yamaha, you know, Morbidelli's backed by Valentino, all of that stuff, like that team was destined to do well from the beginning because everyone wants that team to do well, and Yamaha wants that team to do well, and Petronas is not entering MotoGP at the last ditch, you know, the last second for anything less than these kind of results.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we find out that their technicians have tons of experience and are excuse me, and are helping put these bikes together and get them to the front. I mean, I'm a little surprised. But I'm not, God, I'm a little surprised, but I'm not surprised. I can't even get my words out right now. No, I almost feel like the fact that they're satellite Yamaha and that they're new and they're bringing kind of fresh blood into the championship as with the, probably with some technicians, and with the sponsors, is actually helping them to go fast, because
right. We
see now that the shit that factory Yamaha is doing, like you even talked about how you're kind of tired of the same story, their stuff's getting tired. It's everything that they've tried isn't making a large enough step. It's just shades of Ducati 5 years ago, where Ducati didn't have any front end feel and could never get the front tire to work. Yamaha right now is still don't have the electronics dialed. Still can't get the electronics to work. Like, Maverick finally got a good start and was finally able to be at the front of the race early on so that he could be at the front of the race towards the end, but Rossi suffered with rear tire problems, right? Like, even Mav seemed to not have anything extra. We expected more from him, but he had rear tire issues. So it's that is due to the electronics. To kind of go to the sort of
young guy thing that Rob was really focused on for this, because if there's one thing Rob is into, it's things about young dudes.
God damn it.
But is that, like, there's twofold, right? Like, remember when Stoner like blitzed the field on the Ducati and there was like some rumblings, and Ross even had some quote, I'm paraphrasing here, that like he was too new to know how MotoGP was supposed to feel, so he was just making it go fast.
Yes.
Like, right, so Fabio, like, he's too young and too stupid to know how it's, like, supposed to be. He just getting on the bike and going fast, which is awesome, right? And then Morbidelli's fresh off of, like, the worst bike you could be on the grid, except right up until they made – till Tech 3 went to KTM. But, like, he's just, like – can you imagine how stoked he is just to not be on a piece of shit bike and team? How much is that worth alone? You've got two hungry young guns who, like – sort of don't know any better. You know?
No, that's...
Morbidelli's only point of reference was the worst bike on the grid, arguably, and then Fabio has no point of reference. All he knows is he was on a shitty bike in Moto3, and then a shitty bike his first year in Moto2, gets on an okay bike and suddenly fucking wins out of nowhere and goes nuts and shows up in MotoGP and he's just carrying the momentum.
So what you're saying is that old adage of that ignorance is bliss.
Yes.
The more you know, the slower you go.
The more you know, the slower you go.
Why do you think I'm so slow?
Stay ignorant, Fabio.
Yes, stay ignorant.
Fabio, don't learn shit. Just keep combing
the
hair.
No one shit is underrated. Fabio, just keep getting C's. Because a C-like is you pass, but you're still hot.
No,
and there's room to go faster, like the B's and the A's, right? You're right.
No one thinks anyone that gets an A is cool. You went to high school. What are you talking about?
Yes, your high school GPA doesn't mean shit when you're actually an adult. No, right. Back to motorcycles.
Grades don't mean anything at all, by the way. Fuck grades and everything about them. They mean jack fucking shit. Grades don't mean shit. Your homework doesn't mean shit. Okay. Don't even get me started. I was having this conversation at work today. I will go off on an unrelated fallacy of modern education rant at the drop of a hat.
I mean,
start
you
talking
did
racing, Rob. Or I'm
you did
do it.
Forget
start
how to
racing.
Count to four. No, so this, but we're actually seeing this with KTM as well, right? We've seen some amazing performances out of Oliveira, who took the Mahindra to some amazing performances. Like he seems to be one of the racers that can do exactly what you just described. Doesn't know any better. Will push the bike really hard and get some good results out of it. He's right. Doing that at a KTM. Like Zarco's sitting over there, like fuck this bike. Doesn't feel like a Yamaha. And Oliveira's like, hey, it's a MotoGP bike. I'm going to go fast. Right. And one of the talking points out of the announcers during practice was that Oliveira has now been re-signed. Like, already. We're at freaking round four. KTM is doing squat. They may have taken a step backwards. It's probably more just everyone else has moved on and they're kind of...
A larger step forward.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the satellite... Their satellite team has already re-signed one of their racers. Herb Poncharal classically will sign people early for long contracts. Sometimes they bite him in the ass, Bradley Smith. Sometimes they work out. I don't know. What do you think about? Should we move on to KTM already, or do you want to keep talking about this whole "you don't know makes you go faster" thing?
For me, the story of the weekend, like, there's a lot of things you can talk about. You know, Ducati, bogey, you know, bogey track still in it. Rins, is he a real dark horse? There's a lot of stuff we can get to, but, like, the number one thing people have been saying for a while now, like, unless you're a hardcore Marquez fan, it's felt a little stale. And here is, like, we're going into the French round. Like, Le Mans is coming up. Fabio is on fire. Like, Zarco, who? Who cares about Zarco? Fuck that guy. Like, it's Fabio or bus, man. You know what I mean? Yeah. He's younger, hotter, and has more tattoos, and he's faster. What you gonna do about that?
I mean, Zarco did put it on pole at the French round last year. So I feel like there are some high expectations going into the French round this year. And just like we get that meme all the time of Homer backing up into the hedges with one hat and coming out with a different one. Right, that's exactly what's happening for all the French fans right now, or even the young rider fans, right? Because Zarco was fresh blood into MotoGP, and now we're moving on to Quartararo.
Well, would either one of you guys say that perhaps Fabio is having a much better start to his season now than Zarco has since moving up to GP?
Ooh,
well,
that's a
yes
good
and
question.
No. Like Fabio has shown a lot of brilliance, but. Yeah. Zarco led. Remember, he led Qatar before he crashed out that first time. And all that. Now Fabio, remember, he was looking really fast. He led a session. He qualified great. And then he stalls his bike on the grid. Right? Remember that? Like that
rookie
whole
mistake.
Thing. Rookie mistake. But then, and then like his gear, you know, he busts his nut in the gear shifter. You know, brakes. He can't get out of third. But all of like the talent is there. All of the. The signs are there because he didn't do it at Qatar. He didn't do it at Argentina. He did it at a European round, around a track that all those of guys have put so many laps in. The home base for most of those teams is Europe and all that. Like that, like we said, that wasn't one of the random ass flyaway rounds. That was a, like, you know, the season doesn't start till Europe. And what happened when the season officially started, those dudes went 1-2 on the pole. Title of Rob Sexton.
Plus, you know, Fabio is obviously a lot younger than Zarco was when Zarco moved it to GP.
Yep. Yeah.
And I don't necessarily
and for having
think
that record now.
I don't necessarily think that Zarco moving up as an older rider was wrong. I think if you go back to those early episodes, there was his measure, you know, being mature and having been around and winning some championships probably did really well for him. I'm just saying on a fresh team, on a fresh bike, when everyone's still kind of gelling and figuring stuff out, having kind of like a young guy who's too dumb to know better is like actually kind of a boon for getting that thing up to speed.
Yeah.
And I could think of a couple other examples as well that were that is exactly true. I mean, we've even talked to some riders and kind of asked them about setup and done certain and asked certain specific questions. And honestly, the ones that do well may not have a fucking answer for us. Like, either they don't know or they're keeping their cards close to their chest. But both of them, if they get results, fine. It works out. Yeah. Like, I will tell you that me, I've had my plenty of tuners, like my suspension guy, my engine guy, just oftentimes tell me, shut the fuck up, go ride the bike. Like, stop worrying about it. Let's just do this.
Right. And your job is not adjusting the bike. That's their job.
Yeah, except for the fact that I don't have enough money to pay them all the time, so it is kind of my job.
Right, exactly.
No, I think one other thing to talk about with Fabio, too, that we'll probably get shit for if we don't bring it up. And I kind of already said, too, the Yamaha, and even last year's Yamaha, has had trouble with rear tire grip towards the end of the races. And Fabio had amazing pace up until lap 13 when he wasn't able to go any further. He barely made it. He didn't even make it half race distance, or barely, by one lap. And then obviously we saw Morbidelli peter off towards the end of the race and only finish seventh. Do you actually think that he would have been able to keep it on the podium with the Yamaha, with maybe struggling with tire issues towards the end of the race?
Don't know. Would like to think. I'd hope so. Is he? I mean, Rins has been strong at the end of the races for some time now. Do I think he would have beat Rins? Probably not. But you know, I think he could have been there. I don't really care if he. I'm not looking for someone to podium his fourth race in on a brand new team who, you know, doesn't even have a world championship and kind of like had some surprise wins. Showing early pace, and I mean, people were jizzing their fucking pants over the fact that Zarco led a race for a while before he crashed out. You know what I mean? I mean, Fabio was putting some stank on some passes. He was up there. He's learning a ton. I mean, for me to watch, if Fabio finishes the race fifth, but he gets a shitload of information, some live application, he's sitting there watching, you know, the best in the world in front of him, how he's managing life, how he's managing tire, you know, wear and all that. That's completely priceless information that sometimes you don't ever have a chance to get until you've been a couple years in. Here he is, his fourth race, getting that information. I don't really care if he got what he did at the end of that race, to be honest. I care that he learned enough that he's continually picking stuff up. You know, like the way he was – like you can be told – like, this goes back to my fucking bitching about education, right? But you can be told answers, or you can be told what to do, but declare, you know, you need to learn information through trial and error so you can bring it up as declarative memory, which is problem-solving memory in the moment. Like, that's, there's multiple kinds of learning and multiple kinds, there's like block memory and declarative memory. He can be told by his engineers, you put it in this map and you back off this much and you have this breaking point here, but live trial and error application during a high stress race is going to attach so much emotion to the information that he's going to be able to draw that forward in following races at a much faster and more concise rate.
I don't think that someone being told, like, hey, you need to chill it on the rear tire towards the end of the race is actually going to fucking work.
Right. The only way it can work is if you don't chill and you watch, you feel yourself get slower and have to adapt. Meanwhile, you watch a guy who did manage it go faster. All these guys are smart enough to pick up on these cues as they're racing, and it's just a completely priceless learning time. I don't really care if Fabio podiums now, because look what happened. We talked about Zarco last year, but he had it on pole and he podiums, but he didn't ever take the next step. I want to see guys learn enough to take the next step, and because that's what the series needs. Please, for the love of God, let Fabio just learn enough and have enough information to be a consistent podium challenger, not just run it balls to the wall to the point that he crashes when he doesn't podium.
And that's actually interesting. Sorry, Dennis, real fast here. That's interesting that you'd bring that up, because he has already been in that position of roasting the rear tire, right? With his stalling the bike on the grid, he destroyed the rear tire trying to come through the field and trying to catch everyone. And he caught a lot of people, but he didn't finish very well because he had no grip towards the end of the race. So I wonder if he was able to kind of correlate those two situations and see, like, oh, maybe at Jerez, like, if his pace that he was running behind Marquez was actually him saving the rear tire, and if he would have ended up better off than Morbidelli, because Morbidelli fell off the fastest of all the Yamahas. Yeah, he fell off.
And I was gonna say that had Fabio been able to stay in the race, I'd be willing to say that he would have been able to fend off Vinales from the podium because I don't remember Vinales actually making too much ground moving forward, so much as he was just maintaining his pace
while other guys move backwards.
Yeah, so yeah, even so, if Fabio like fell off a tiny bit, he still had a pretty good. He would have had a pretty good margin on Maverick at the time.
Yeah, and I felt like he would have had third place after Vince got through, but you know, we'll never know.
Yeah, I mean, in wild speculation. That's what you come to BrotoGP for. No, yeah. So I mean, and I can speak. I promise. I do hope that he's learning enough in these situations. And you're right, Kev. That's really something that I hadn't thought of, was that him just following Marquez around and being in that podium position was a large learning situation for him. I mean, and we're going to talk about Maverick here in a little bit. That's actually something that Maverick hasn't really seen all season long because he's been getting shitty starts.
Right. So this other than his win, or late last year, most of last season.
Yeah.
Wait. I'm not ready to talk about KTM or Vinales yet. I still want to talk about good stuff. And you know, the other surprise for me, Fabio or SRT, is Rins, Suzuki, and Rins. Like, is this one of those things where they're still being complimented by Yamaha's woes, or are they legitimately a front runner now?
I think you gotta say somewhat legitimately because they won a race again. Even if Marquez doesn't have his problem at COTA and he wins, Rins is a solid second place, solid podium. He gets a solid, like, no asterisks podium again this race while expertly managing the tire at the end of the race, like we were talked about, to be able to bring it home, close distance, and get second after a shitty qualifying. I mean, people, it hasn't come up that much, like, in talk, but Rins can't, like, everyone, like, literally bust the Fabio, like bust the nut that Rossi started from like 13th and got whatever he got, 6th, right? Like they freaked the fuck out that he passed some people, but like you don't even hear a lot of talk about the fact that Rins qualified quite poorly, all things considered, and came and brought it home in second place. Solid second place. Passed those guys. I mean, that was no asterisk. Did everything exactly perfect to manage that bike. The Suzuki and Rins is a front runner. One mistake by Marquez and they could win, right? Fabio's gear shift doesn't break and he's dive bomb passing and riding like a young crazy dude with Marquez. Who knows what happens, but Rins has himself in a position every race, it seems, to be able to do really well. I consider Rins, I'm not going to say dark horse for the championship because the number of times Marquez is going to DNF for anyone to be able to win is just too much. But Rins is going to be there week in and week out. I really think that.
Well, and that's the thing. Like you brought up the comparison to Yamaha. The Suzuki and Rins are doing everything that the Yamaha was supposed to be good at. They're doing it better.
Right.
Like, even if Maverick gets his shitty starts and he ends up in the same exact position as Rins is, and Rins still beats him.
Right.
Like, that's just, I mean, Rins is second in the championship right now, 1 point behind Marquez. That's just how the whole season is working out. So if Maverick can fix his starts, if Rins can improve his qualifying, it's just going to increase his chances of actually winning races and putting it on the podium consistently, right? And that's what makes the title challenger. That's what shows you that they've developed a good motorcycle. I mean, even Mir wasn't actually doing that bad this race until he made that mistake. He crashed, right? Yeah, when did he crash?
Have I told 12. Either one of you guys the Suzuki bet that I made early on in the season?
No.
So a friend of mine, you know, diehard Suzuki fan, not necessarily a Rins fan, but it's a Suzuki fan. Before the season started, he makes a $100 bet with me that by the end of the season, Rins will beat both factory Yamaha riders.
In the championship?
But yeah, both. Not just one, but both. He bet me $100 that was going to happen. And I almost felt guilty shaking his head because I'm like, if he had said like Rins will beat one factory Yamaha, okay, I could go with that. But he said Rins will beat both factory M1 riders this year in the points championship. How's that looking like to you guys right now?
I can see it.
Yeah, right? I mean, to me too. Like, I'm like, wow, I'm kind of sweating a little bit here. You know what I mean?
I'm not willing to take the bet per se, like that action. I'm not necessarily willing to put that down, but I could totally see it. He's been consistent. Last year, he ended really well. both Marquez, excuse me, both Vinales and Valentino are wildly inconsistent, and Rins is far is far more consistent, and they seem to continue to take that step. And you know, and he's a young learning rider who's growing with that team, and I could totally see it.
But we could see it right now, but would you have been able to see that before the season even started?
Yes, I think if you look back on our Instagram, I even posted about how Rins was a dark horse for multiple wins this year.
I would have had to research that bet like pretty hardcore. Like looking at
you don't research bets, Rob. Well, you just bet.
No.
You don't research bets. What are you talking about? Look at Rob. Rob is not a true gambler. Rob, no. First of all, when you gamble, it's not about winning or losing. It's like when you spin the wheel on the roulette table, it has nothing to do with whether you win or lose. It's the uncertainty of that spin. That action is all that matters.
Yeah, I don't gamble.
I literally had my brother who fucking him and his wife got divorced, and it was the classic worst divorce you could ever hear. He pays more money in child support than I fucking make in a year every year. Right. And the end of this month is the end of the child support. And we literally said the hundreds of dollars per week that he's going to spend, he has to give every month, we're just going to roll the casino and put it on black every Thursday, every single Thursday, the exact amount of money. Actually, to be frank, the first thing we're going to do is take the amount of money that he's supposed to pay her but doesn't have to because the kids are 18 now, and we're going to light it on fire on Snapchat and send it.
Well, that's cool. I mean, both of those things sound fun, but that's, yes, that is gambling. That's like you're paying for the experience to enjoy shit like that.
Correct.
Right? If I'm making a bet with a friend about MotoGP when I'm supposed to be the tech guy, the guy that knows shit here, I'm going to research this. I'm going to look at the Wikipedia and I'm going to go, Kev is right. Like Rins was very consistent at the end of the season last year. Mm-hmm. And Suzuki might pull that forward. I mean, if he hadn't have made so many fucking mistakes at the beginning of last season, he probably would have beat both Valentino and Maverick then.
Yeah, speaking of guys who were right on Friday and said JD Beach would win his first Superbike race, and then he totally does.
Well played, Kev. Well played.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wait, you said he has 2/5 of a Grand National? Explain
to me. He won a TT a week before, and then he won a Superbike race. He's got to win
Wait, what are the other three?
A mile, a half mile. Because a TT has the jump and the turn. Yeah. So he still needs to win the other three standard flat track races to win. And I don't think no one's done a Grand Slam in one season since like 80 something.
I didn't know that he had to win on all of the flat track, like.
All four flat track races and a Superbike race.
Okay.
Yes. Layouts. Yes. I know we had a little bit of a digress there, but if you guys don't know JD Beach, he won Super Prestigio when they had it last time in Spain. He's, you know, he's an AMA or a Moto America Superbike rider, and he has a crazy idea of racing full-time Moto America and full-time flat track. And I thought, like, oh man, like the guy's going to burn himself out. Like we think about Josh Herron last year when he tried to race World Superbike and Moto America in the same weekend. He did shitty in both, right? Because you spread yourself so thin.
Yeah.
But it's just too much. Specialization exists for a reason. This isn't like 1973, you know what I mean? But JD Beach proves this wrong. He goes and wins a TT, and then 7 days later goes and wins a fucking Moto America or Superbike race on a satellite team, no less.
Yeah.
So
in flat track.
Go look at the flat track win. It's JD Beach at Tetson. How do you say their name? Racing? I can't remember.
Shit, Estetten? No,
it's something weird, right?
Now you got me.
Yamaha, and then like the next eight guys are Indians. You know what I mean? Like he had no business winning that race, and then he goes and wins his fucking Superbike race. Anyway, we digress. All I'm saying is I know everything. I'm never wrong. Maverick was definitely the 2016 or the 2017 champion. Don't look that up. Take my word for it. And if you do look that up, guys, who are you going to believe? Me? Or your lion eyes.
Or the internet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was going to say something earlier. Oh, yeah. Fabio can't really look up how to save tire on the internet. Like, he's going to have to learn that shit himself.
Right.
I can type a lot into Google, but I don't think that one's going to come up.
Right. But if he did want to learn about, like, his math channels and using his stuff and analyzing his writing, he could look up the BrotoGP playlist of Rob and Dennis, you know, nerding out. I don't even know what was going on in those things.
The R&D videos and the tech tapes. Yeah, he could look it up, but he'd probably get dumber from it because I'm sure.
Which means he'll go faster.
Oh!
Correct. Correct.
See, that's why you put it out there.
If you want to get dumber and go faster.
Look at me.
Listen to BrotoGP.
I mean, Dennis did go faster after all of our conversations about his lap times.
Exactly.
Wow. Wow, that's a good one. I actually had someone contact me about looking over their laps, and like I emailed them right back. I was like, yeah, let's do it. Let's just record it and put it on YouTube.
Another aspiring dumbass.
Yeah, yes. But he was surprised that A, I emailed him back, B, I wasn't going to charge him, and C, that we... Like, he was like, what, you're available to do it now? What? It's like, yeah, I fucking work from home. Let's just do it. God damn.
Yeah,
BrotoGP, like where we don't charge for information and talk shit about our sponsors. This is the dopest business plan ever.
Best money-making scheme right here.
All right, real quick little aside here.
I am so over BrotoGP's quick get-rich-quick schemes. But this one's going to get us rich and quick.
Step one,
that's
steal
another
underpants.
Obscure Sifrin's reference. Yes.
Step two, not so sure. Step three, profit. Right. No, actually, so speaking of profit, so BrotoGP right now is running a pre-order on a very obscure joke that we've got running in the BrotoGP army on a t-shirt. I'm going to put it over our faces on the YouTube channel right now. It's BrotoGP on a shirt with Andre Iannone's face and a link to writerslawwithaz.com. I'm sure most of you haven't been there, but you need to go if you haven't checked it out yet. It's just, it's a joke. You'll get it. The pre-order for that shirt is going to end essentially the day that you listen to this episode. We're closing it down on May 9th, Thursday, May 9th at midnight. Or at 11:59
p.m. We don't want any more profit. No more profits.
Yeah, right. No, because we have to actually like cut it off and then tell the printer how many of what size to print so that we can actually give them to all you people. Because we know that you love your t-shirts and you want them right now. So we're going
to
close it down.
And also, for all of you people, like, if there's one thing we don't do, which is, like, a lot of things, but if there's one thing we don't do right, is that we don't reprint our shirts. If this is something you want, you got to pre-order it. I take a point of pride in reveling in the tears of fans who want old shirts that we don't give them. We don't reprint shirts. If you have the Tricolore shirt, you can be one of the many people who wish they had one and don't. Wow, you haven't even opened it yet.
Nope.
So, if you guys want to know what that is a bag of 10 to 15 Brotendo shirts that I found in a box in my attic.
I don't even have one for
Buster
myself.
Buster had been using as a bed. So those come with – there's a cool story behind this. So not only are those – that is a small cachet of tightly wrapped BrotoGP Nintendo shirts. But shortly after that, I have an attic above. And as I was coming out from the attic, which uses a ladder – the ladder decided it didn't want to be under me anymore.
What? Are you serious?
So I totally ate shit off the fucking, like, the ceiling of the barn, like, literally, whoop, like, fucking Three Stooges style, like, the ladder goes like this, yoink! And there's a pull-up bar over the spot where I go. So I'm thinking I'm going to be like a parkour fucking master, right? I'm literally Jason Bourne right now. I just beat a guy up with a book, and now I'm looking for shirts. The ladder falls out. I'm going to grab the thing, do a backflip, land, do a pirouette, and be good. That is not what happens, folks. Instead of going straight down and landing on my feet, I grab the bar. My momentum, because gravity and centrifugal force is a thing, my body swings like this. The moment I swing out from under, because if you look at the shape of your hand, everything's all gravy when you're like this. But if you're trying to hold something like this, it's not that dope. And I'm 195 pounds. I go, whoop! Fly, somehow I go up in the air, lose my grip, the ladder's on the ground, and I literally fall straight down onto the back of the ladder. Oh. My head snaps back like a gear shift lever on an SRT Yamaha, and boom, smash. This fucking barn is on piles, right? And that's like, you know, force plus acceleration. What is it? Mass acceleration equals force? Rob, you tell me, you're a fucking nerd.
Mass times acceleration.
Mass times, right? Yep. So I am accelerating. My force is increasing. I hit the fucking thing. The whole house shakes. My girlfriend is literally like eating a bowl of cereal. And like, so I'm above the door, right? She doesn't see me. Yeah. All she sees is me go, "Hiyan!" Boom! So no clue what's happening. All she sees is me fall out of the sky from midair like it's the beginning of that movie Predators. Also, you assholes could get those shirts. Rob's opening it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's, you know, there's something that's really popular on YouTube called like
yes,
unboxing,
open unboxings. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna do an unboxing here and just see how much Buster cat hair there is on these shirts. I promise that the amount of cat hair will be reduced before these get mailed to anyone.
He didn't say removed. He said reduced.
I actually think it's a physical impossibility to remove all cat hair from a garment. Mm-hmm. Like, no matter what. We could cats could be extinct and we'll still find cat hair 100 years from now.
Right.
All right.
So post that. Hold a shirt up so people can see.
Yeah, so this one actually looks pretty hairy.
Woo! Look at that design. God damn, we should reprint that. But we're not.
Yeah, but so I don't think you can see the cat hair on the front, but if I turn it around.
No, hold on. Put the front up. Put the shit on Instagram. Damn. Put it up on front. Yeah! That Buster hair is $5 extra.
That shirt's going to make it look like a silverback gorilla.
Yes.
It totally is.
Or a raccoon. I don't know.
Look, is the lighting right? Can you see the cat hair?
I could see it.
Oh,
even
God.
Though it's like,
oh, it's bad. No, yeah, I bought bad. Many lint rollers.
Limited edition.
Right. Limited edition.
Yes. Yeah, so,
remember when we talked about how we don't do anything right to make money, and what we're doing right now is selling you on a shirt that I found in my attic that's covered in cat hair. You should
it's
buy it.
It's the story that sells. You it's should the buy story. It. You guys ever watch American Pickers? It's always about the story.
Dude,
so,
that's good if point. You want that shirt, point. Guys, I ate shit to
there
get
you
that
go.
Shirt. Literally ate shit. Like, I'm still sore. I felt like 10 feet straight onto my back, and I landed on the ladder too. I didn't even land like on the ground. I landed on the ladder.
I'm surprised you don't have some sort of spinal injury, Kev. Like, that could have been fucking
bad. I probably
bad.
Do. I just drink a lot. So,
oh, speaking of alcohol, so we got shit like one or two episodes ago for drinking wine on the podcast. So this time I am having a gin gimlet in a martini glass. Just to, because someone said like fucking wine and motorcycle racing doesn't mix, which is bullshit because most of the people that watch motorcycle racing are Spanish or Italian and all they do is drink wine. So gin gimlet, the handle of gin I bought like 6 weeks ago is pretty much gone. It's fucking amazing. That is all. Oh, also is all. There is now
that
being...
guy probably didn't see the episode where I drank an entire bottle of wine out of a coffee pot.
Not a coffee mug, a coffee
pot. No, it was
pot.
A pot. It was a coffee pot. Mm-hmm. Or when I drank a whole bottle of NyQuil straight without stopping and did irreparable damage to my liver. Many people ask me, wow, when you fell on the ladder and like those lats and your lower back hit it, wasn't it like getting hit in the liver shot? Joke's on you. The whole back side of mine has NyQuil-induced psoriasis. I don't feel a thing.
That sounds terrible, Kev. These shirts are currently being more cat-haired.
Yes. if you guys are watching, listening on the iTunes, he is showing us the fact that he put the shirts on the ground and his white cat Pearl is deciding to sleep on them right now.
These are custom. You know what
would be awesome
shirts?
If she just pissed on them because like they smell like Buster, and we spent like the last 8 minutes talking about how you should buy these shirts, and the cat's just taking them down. Anyways, to go back to Rob's actual point, guys, so we get back to racing. If you're interested in that shirt will end. Pre-sale ends Thursday the 9th, and then we won't make it again. What I like to do is make new shirts every time. Like I'm not. You guys know me, man. I'm like a borderline anarchist. I'm not interested in just reprinting the same shirt over and over and over again so I can make a few bucks per shirt. None of us are retiring on shirts. We make them because it's fun. It's people like it. It's a community. We like to make new ones, consistently make new ones. Also, like we said last week, every shirt will come with a picture of Buster that you can magnet on your refrigerator.
Oh, now they're magnets?
No.
Oh,
a
okay.
Picture that here's you could magnet, not a magnet picture.
Gotcha. Yeah. No, we're in the process of picking out a picture.
A
there.
Good Buster photo.
Yeah, a good
right.
Buster photo. But that'll happen for sure. I already found out who's going to print them and all that good stuff.
You guys think we're joking? You're going to get hella pictures of my cat, bitches.
Oh, Pearl's going at the tree. There she goes. Okay. I apologize to everyone on listening on iTunes because there's actually some shit going down on the YouTube this time.
Things are actually happening.
Yeah. So for the Brotendo shirts, though, those will end up on the store, shop.brotogp.com, sometime soon. I have one or two people that I promised I would give first dibs on, but the rest of them will be available, and I'm not going to have more favoritism than just that than that. So yeah, there's like 10 right there. I'm sure they will sell out in 10 minutes. Cool.
Want to know a secret, guys, about the Brotendo shirts?
You don't even have one?
No, I do.
Oh, okay.
But what I don't have is one of the Valentino Rossi shirts that we made
don't
that everyone
one
asked
either,
us yeah. to reprint. I don't have one of those. But the guy that printed those... his wife is, I can't remember what she's doing. She has some crazy job. Like, whoa. Like, apparently crazy enough, I don't remember it. But they're not going to make the shirts anymore so she can focus on this career because it's like a life-changing career. So he was going through all of his stuff as he's closing up his printing, his screen press and all that. And what did he find? A cachet of artist-proof prints of that shirt. Irregular shirts.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. One-off ones. There will very well may be a pile of not just limited edition, but like pre-printing limited edition, odd colors, mismatched, all kinds of weird shit.
Nice.
It's gonna be good.
I'll take one.
Or like this, like this, like women's medium that's like not straight at all. Like one of those.
Oh, look at that! That's nice.
Yeah, yeah. No, there are some rejects. Actually,
so
you should.
So is that
send
shirt
us the
for
screens.
A lesbian?
Oh no, that was poor taste. Poor taste.
You're fired, Dennis.
Yeah, you're totally fired. All right, let's get back to motorcycle
racing.
You're
gonna be replaced by Kyle Wyman next week.
Yes, you are, and we're gonna play Jeopardy.
Yes.
Let's talk about the championship real fast. So I think we already said it earlier that Jerez.
You shitheads do that. I'm gonna get some more wine.
Do it. Good. We already said it earlier that Jerez is kind of a Ducati bogey track. I mean, Dovizioso has never had a podium at this track, still hasn't, even though he's been a title challenger and the Ducati has been a pretty good bike now for a couple of years. And I mean, and even when he was on previous motorcycles, like the Satellite M1 and the Honda as well. But so we get to this position in the championship and we make it through and we still have four racers up front in the championship that are quite close together, even with Marquez being dominant minus the crash.
Well,
like Dennis,
only for us to thank Marquez for. I mean, if it wasn't for his crash at Coda, it would be an entirely different story.
That's true. It would be, it'd be what, 24 points, 26 points ahead, potentially?
I think part of my GP fatigue does involve the Vizioso and Ducati.
I literally go to get some wine, and I come back, and what I hear is part of my GP fatigue. Why is this asshole even on this show?
Dennis, finish your point there.
I was gone Make it for more like positive. 46 seconds. That is 2.5 Rob sex tapes. And I am back, and Dennis is talking about how he's fatigued and not interested. Do you have low T, Dennis?
Low what?
Low T. You know, you get to become a man of a certain age, you get low T. You go see your doctor, you get some more T.
I seriously have no idea what you guys are talking about. That one just went over my head.
Right. It's actually not a joke.
That's probably why I didn't get it.
Probably. No, so Dennis, you can continue your point, but it has to be positive in the end.
Then I'm done.
Ah, shitballs. All right, well,
let me explain something here about positivity, guys. In 2019, like, you can't find anything online that's not people bitching. Like, we started the rant and the bitching and complaining about the English media and complaining about the backlash to Wings and all that, and we were ahead of the curve. And I'm changing the curve once again. It's like I said, like, I really thought about this as I'm, like, typing in, like, oh, man, Game of Thrones, it's going to be sick. There's going to be a new battle, Winterfell, yada, yada. And everything is people complaining. Everything on Twitter is people complaining. Everything on Facebook is someone complaining about something. We're not complaining. There's too much dope shit in the world to be complaining about this fucking shit. You're fatigued, Don GP? Oh, sorry. Super colorful, really loud, awesomely amazing machines written by charismatic dudes are circling around a track for your fucking entertainment. If you don't like that, find a huge bag of dicks and choke on it.
I mean, it's essentially motorcycle pornography. I'm not going to complain about pornography. I'm just going to alter my search a little bit. Right? Not going to
pornography. I was at the pornography store.
That's believable. Yeah, Dennis, so just change your search a little bit here, right? Stop focusing on the fact that Marquez is probably going to win the title again.
No, I
Let's
have.
Go for
I mean,
something
I've shifted,
else.
I've shifted my focus, like I said, on the first two topics we talked about, which is the SRT squad or Cuartararo, and also Rins. I'm definitely keeping an eye on him, not just because I have $100 on the line, but because they do... I guess I was surprised by them mainly because I just was not even thinking about them. At the end of the last season or going into the season.
That's
I was still
exactly
about...
why it's good, because shit
right,
that
no,
doesn't meet your expectations is exciting.
Which I'm glad that they exist right now, because they really are keeping me going as far as MotoGP is concerned.
So shift your expectations for Ducati here, right? Let's recognize that Dovizioso had a good outing at Jerez. And is 3 points back in the title, right? I think he's closer than he's ever
been. I don't
want to
say a good outing. I want to say a serviceable outing.
Serviceable outing.
Not bad. It could have been worse.
Not bad. It could have been a lot worse. It could have been like last year.
Remember, we have to think about one of the things about tempering expectations is that, like, if we want to talk about Dovizioso being like a championship contender, not a winner, but a contender, someone who keeps it interesting. This guy has now gone multiple years straight winning multiple races. I believe it was 2016 when he won that Sepang race in the wet, and then the next year he won multiple, next year won multiple. Like, we're now entering the third year where we expect this guy to win multiple races and at least keep the championship honest, which is not what we want. Keep it honest. We don't want manufactured champions. You know, we don't want, champions split by half a point because a race doesn't end right and they decide to go half points and stuff like that. We want like a real
I don't know.
Champion.
I'd be okay with that, actually.
Yes. Okay. Sure. But we want to keep it honest, right? And
yeah.
For me, like, Dovi's job is to keep it honest, and he wins a lot of races every year. Which is why I can't consider him getting, you know, his finishing position of this last race. Like, he didn't podium, and this is a guy who I expect to be podiuming most times now. He's on arguably the second best bike on the grid, you know? A strong argument that's second best bike on the grid. Maybe even the first best.
I could make the argument it's the best bike on the grid.
Right,
yeah,
right.
For sure.
And he's their lead rider. He's their flagship rider and has been for a number of years now. He is who development is built around. So what was his actual finishing position again?
He got fourth.
This race? Yeah, fourth. So again,
from
serviceable.
A super shitty qualifying position. Track that Ducati hasn't really done well at until last year when the riders took everyone, when all the riders took each other out.
Right.
and we're at a track that he's never got a podium at. I actually think he surpassed my expectations a little bit. I really thought that that one of the SRT, the satellite Yamahas, or maybe even another of the factory Yamahas would finish in front of him because of his starting position. So, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, he surpassed my expectations. He was a little bit down on yours, Kevin. Dennis is just tired of Ducati expectations. So he's kind of, he's getting mixed reviews here, which is fine, right? We want one-star, five-star reviews. I guess for Dennis, he gets a three-star, which we've talked about before.
Well, no, I'm not even ready to rank him yet, just because it's still, for me, it's still early on in the season. I'm not ready to rank anybody for that matter.
Good.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah, fewer expectations then. So don't be disappointed.
Lowered expectations.
No, I said fewer. I didn't say lower. Just no expectations is way different than low expectations.
Absolutely.
No, I mean, the Ducati story, right, is it's we're in it for the long haul at this point, right? Like, when we're talking about a championship contender, we're not looking for flashes in the pan like Quartararo, right? We're not looking for the like a massive improvement or Valentino finally winning his next race, right? We're not looking for those things because we know that Dovizioso is already going to have to 2006 his way to a championship. He's going to have to be very, very consistent and wait for someone else to make mistakes. Right. If that ends up happening at the end of the year, we're going to be fucking jumping for joy. We're going to be getting drunk off of Italian wine and it's going to be freaking amazing. And we're going to sell a ton of 8-bit Dovizioso Ducati shirts.
But I mean, but didn't Kevin just make a point that if things like that were to happen, who's in line to benefit from that? Suzuki and Rins. So Dovizioso's kind of got competition in that field.
Yeah, which is fine as well, right? If they both 2006 their way to a championship contender or to fighting for it, right? Like, I mean, yes, we're essentially waiting for Marquez to take himself out of the championship by crashing too much. I mean, and this, I'll bring it up here. This round, he had a couple of saves in practice and qualifying, like he's supposed to, and he didn't crash in the race. The second I saw, they actually didn't show it in Q2, but I think when he was pushing for that final lap, show it live. They showed it as a replay. He tucked the front and had to stand it up, and that's why his like hot lap was ruined, and he didn't.
Tucked the front and stood up. Tyler Robb sex tape.
Yeah, I figured you were going to get one in there. But
also, Tyler Robb sex tape.
Yeah.
God damn it. Just sneak it up on me, Kev.
Third one right there.
Yep.
Boom.
No, but they
trilogy.
They showed that. They showed that highlight. They showed him saving the front there, and I was like, shit. He figured it out. He figured out where that line is, and he's not going to crash in the race. He didn't do that at COTA, and because he didn't do that at COTA, it finally crashed in the race. Well, actually, no, we will talk about this as well. Apparently, there was some mechanical difficulties with his gearbox.
Mm-hmm. Sure there was. Right.
Yeah, sure there was.
It couldn't just be a mistake. Right. It couldn't be just a human error. I believe he said he's only human that week, too. Oh, suddenly he's not, right? Like, it's got to be a mechanical.
Okay. Fuck Ducati, then. Let's transition over to that because it's way more of a hilarious point. I actually think it's a good move for HRC to tell Marquez that, no, there was a problem with your gearbox. This is why you crashed. We got the engine braking wrong on that specific corner at that specific time, and you went down. Yes, right. Or no? Agree or disagree?
Yes. From a fan perspective, it's like, God damn, man. Like, the guy can make him. Like, do you have to really shove it down our throat like that? You know what I mean? But from a team perspective, from like you think of a coach or a writer's coach or a team, you know, overall, yes, you always want to say, you know what? That's on us. You don't want to ding his confidence. You always want to take the blame off of your star. Always. Right or wrong, I've said this a million times. I've talked about this before on the podcast, and you know, other words, you always want to. Part of being in charge is taking the blame, even when it's not actually your blame. If it's for like the greater good of the team, the organization, the crew, or whatever.
Yeah, what did you just say? Specialization, right? Like,
right.
The less the rider has to do outside of the actual racing, like him worrying about mechanicals or crashing or whatever, the faster he's going to go when he's actually racing.
One less question he has to answer in an interview. Why'd you crash? Don't know. Talk to Puig. or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, or, don't know. I mean, talk to so.
And they asked,
don't know.
They
like,
asked
they, that was a mechan- there was a. They told me there was a software problem and an engine braked 23% less than I expected, which meant I had to put this much more on the front brake, and I lost it. Like anything to take the weight off of him, to take the spotlight off of his mistake. We've talked about this a million times. Confidence equals a like. It equals time. Rider confidence literally is an intangible decrease in lap times.
Yep.
And if you put a rider in a spotlight, they're already in the spotlight enough. If you can take any percentage of ownership off of them onto you, you should. If I was a crew chief, literally my rider would never make a mistake. Ever. And I would make sure to say that. My rider didn't make a mistake. I fucked up. It doesn't need to be true. The only two people that need to know it's true are the rider and the crew chief, or the rider and the team boss. And those two, the ownership of that is a bond that you create that's very difficult to break and has a lot of trust. I'm Rob's crew chief and he crashes in Moto America, I don't give a fuck if he crashed because he fucking grabbed too much brake. He crashed because my suspension accidentally added too much clicks of compression damping and we messed it up for him. If I take the ownership of that, he knows, and he wants to ride that much harder for me. Or he knows that I took pressure off of him so he can focus on it. Like, what do you think the dude doesn't leave Repsol Honda for? Because in their eyes, from a publicity standpoint, he's never made a mistake ever.
That's a very good point.
How do you back that up?
They're
ride or die.
HRC even took it to another level, right? It seemed like they gave him just enough information to understand that it was their fault, right? That it was the bike's fault, but they didn't give him so much information to like fuck with his head and get him thinking about it, right? All they said was, we found an issue. It's not, we've taken care of it, right? Because they took Jorge's bike back as well because he had the mechanical in that race too. And going with that as well, then when he gets to the interviews, that's the information that he has.
It's always electrical gremlin. It's because what you don't want as a crew chief is to say, hey, this clutch is fucked up, bro. That's why you crashed. Because then he's thinking, well, my clutch is fucked up.
Yeah, right.
Fuck, that's scary. Or my brake. Wait, you're telling me the fucking brakes are messed up? Brembo made the caliper wrong? No. Electrical gremlin, bro. That was just a fitting wasn't soldered right. It's all good. We fixed it.
I can't even imagine what the old two-stroke riders dealt with in their head that they had to cover the clutch lever just in case the engine seized. Like,
right,
how do you...
Like men?
How do you... Yes, yes. I mean, but how do you fucking ride through that? Like, how do you just constantly, like, rest your hand there, like, just in case the motor is going to prevent me from moving forward when I'm doing 140 miles an hour.
Just in case this internal combustion engine becomes an external combustion engine, I need to make sure I cover this lever.
This
is literally the oh shit lever.
Yep. Yeah, I can't even imagine what that did to their head and how those riders got through it. I mean, and we've heard stories, right? Like Jorge Lorenzo, it took him a couple of years in GP to stop doing that when he didn't need to anymore, right? Like, they even had auto blippers at the time, right? He didn't even have to use the clutch very often except for the start. And some of them were still covering the clutch lever far too long. Stop messing with your microphone there, Kevin. Nope, I think you got it. Either way. So Dennis, we're going to move on to your grumpy Frenchman over here.
Yeah.
Since I know you want to talk about him. And we're going to talk about this rider confidence now. So Johann Zarco.
Ooh, suffering from a little bit of ennui.
Suffering from a lot of that. He completely mind-fucked at the moment, both by the motorcycle and his team. Like, it's Wednesday right now after the Jerez round. There's reports that the CEO has been saying that Zarco's performances are completely unacceptable. Zarco is, of course, struggling with the complete lack of front-end feel from the KTM because Pol Espargaró has developed a motorcycle that essentially just must be ridden like the Honda or harder than that. Where do you think Zarco and KTM go from here, Dennis?
Is that what it was? Because I didn't even realize that's what he was complaining about, the lack of front-end feel. Because to be honest, ever since the season started, where he's been nowhere. I haven't even kept track of what's going on with Zarco and KTM other than
who?
It's looking exactly. It's looking.
Has
like
a rider ever disappeared so quick? I mean, no. He literally didn't come back from the snap. That bitch was Gamora. KTM took that dude and threw him off the cliff to get a Soul Stone. They literally traded that which they love the most to try to get that Soul Stone. I don't even know who Zarco is. Who are you talking about?
He fell straight down on the ocean bed under the weight of all that money.
Who?
No, so Dennis, that's the speculation that's going around is that the KTM has no front end feel. So you can't actually like float it into the corner and carry corner speed like you would on an M1. So the only way to get that bike around the racetrack is to stop and go. And,
but I thought they're using the Trellis frame, which is known for its ability to provide feel and feedback.
I mean, the ability could exist if you welded all the spars in the correct location and they were the right thickness. And it's the exact same problem that you have from all other chassis. Like, it has to be the right stiffness. It has to respond to frequencies correctly. It has to flex in the correct directions under certain forces. People are falling asleep here.
Something stiff and flexing in the right direction.
Yeah, you don't want it to go the wrong way. God, that just hurts so bad.
The only thing I want to say about it, and the only thing I have to say, is that I still want to see Red Bull as a whole succeed in MotoGP.
I mean, they got the money
in the program, exactly, and they've already put too much into it. I want them to keep going. Whether that's going to be Zarco to carry them through, I don't know anymore. But you know, I still wish the best for Red Bull more than I do for Zarco.
I'm just kind of glad. I'm not glad that he's doing poor, because obviously it's not good to have a manufacturer that much money doing poor. But like, to hear the CEO complain, this is the same CEO who said he didn't want to hire Marc Marquez because if they won, it would be just Marquez, and that money that he could pay him would be better spent for development. I'm like, eat shit and die. Marquez will be doing hella better on this bike, and you fucking know it, and everyone knows it, and you designed a shitty bike, and instead of hiring a fucking guy that would mask that shit and get you good results, you wanted to fucking own those results, man. You live by the sword, you die by the sword. If you say we hire riders so that we know that our bike is the best, bitch, you are backhanded saying we didn't hire the best rider we could have.
Like, I mean, literally. The Stoner effect attracts a lot of sponsors and a lot of fans. Mm-hmm. And
can I throw a quick pop quiz to you guys?
Sure.
You love to do this.
It's the only thing I'm good for. Now, other than Marquez, who in the grid, it may even include Moto2, Moto3, I don't care. Who in the grid could ride around and mask problems on a motorcycle?
Which motorcycle?
Lots of them could.
KTM,
but
for
I don't think anyone could do it to the level that Marquez does.
Really, Marquez is the only one now that could do that?
If we pick the KTM, I will say Cal is probably the second best that could ride it, because it sounds like the issues that the satellite Hondas struggle with, and essentially all the Honda riders, like even Danny Pedrosa, wasn't as aggressive as Marquez, didn't do shit, couldn't get heat into the tires the way Marquez could, didn't ever make it work. Cal Crutchlow is the second best Honda rider because he has transformed his riding style to be like Marquez's. If you transplant that riding style onto the KTM, I think it wouldn't work that bad. And Cal also has the experience to be able to develop the electronics in a way that would better suit him. He could probably develop the bike better than Hull and Zarco put together. I mean, that's probably partly why he has a HRC test contract right now, right? I mean, no one else. There is literally no one else that I would want to put on that bike. I mean, what, Brattle? oh, we could get to Brattle too. Oh, we got to talk about that. I mean, yeah, because I mean, we're seeing it now too, right? You can't put Jorge on a Honda and expect anything, right? Maybe Dovizioso, because one, he's ridden the Honda before. Two, the Ducati is also like a get in and get out of the corner sort of bike. But the Ducati is so stable and just has so much power and is so smooth.
You wouldn't
on
put
corner,
Dovi on it to override it. You'd put Dovi on it to shut the fuck up and ride it for 3 years and give me good feedback and help us develop it and not rock the boat in the process.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
God. You know what I mean? You put Dovi on it because you want to win in 3 years. You put Marquez on it because I want to win in 3 weeks.
Random speculation question. Where would Marquez finish on the KTM at Jerez last weekend?
He'd win.
You think so?
I don't know. How the fuck could you bet against him, man? Like,
I was gonna say fifth.
Yeah, I mean, he top five. I wouldn't be surprised if he podiumed. I mean, he's like a transcendent talent. Like, I make lots of jokes about hating on him. Although I'll be honest, I would root for him on the KTM straight up because it would be an amazing story. Yeah. But like, he completely reinvented the riding style of the grid. He completely, like, redefined what we expected to go fast, like what we mean by going fast. Like, he's completely, like, shattered every glass ceiling, every barrier throughout his career. What are you gonna bet against him? You're crazy. Like, no, like,
Rob doesn't bet. Remember that? He's
an idiot.
No, I totally agree with Kev's bet, just to bet on Ray every single round.
Right.
For World Superbike last year. This year, yeah. Oh, man, if you would have done that ahead of time.
Brutal.
Oh, that'd be terrible.
Right.
But you just lose a shit ton of money
a lot,
by a
right.
little bit every time.
Right. But, man, when you finally won, whoof, that'd be a good action. Like, the fucking 3 minutes, you'd be like, it'd just the moon back. It'd be so good. That's what it's about.
I haven't even checked the odds on Johnny Ray winning a race. Do you think they're even good yet?
I don't know. After he said there's no track we can beat them on, I don't think that helped the odds.
Well, no, but it would help the odds, right?
No,
it would help the payout.
It would help the payout, but not the odds.
That's what I meant. I think the odds of Johnny Ray winning race are still good, such that it's a fool's bet because the payout's not high enough.
Right. Yeah, you have to bet too much to win anything of interest.
Yeah, exactly. Dennis, what were we talking about before your little quiz question there?
KTM.
So much KTM. Yeah. No, I'm done talking about KTM. I mean, Zarco, it pains me to see the CEO like turn on Zarco so fast, because it's painfully obvious that the bike is deficient and it's just not made for a rider like him. Like, Zarco has the maturity, the patience to be able to learn to ride a MotoGP bike. Like, fucking wait for him, right? Don't throw him under the bus already. God damn. But and KTM needs Zarco there, right? Because if they can develop their bike even half into an M1, right? Maybe keep some of the strengths, right? Their motor is supposed to be powerful, just kind of too aggressive in power delivery. If they can keep that, tone it down just a little bit, and then develop the front end feel, they might end up with a motorcycle that will fight for top fives. And I don't think they're going to get there with pole. He's led them down this way. And it hasn't really worked out for them.
Yeah, I think Paul has taken them as far as Paul can take them.
Yeah. I mean, actually, what...
Until you put a proven winner on the bike, you don't know. You need a proven winner. Like, and, you know, it's like Yamaha 2003, 2004. At some point, you got to just put a proven winner on that thing.
And we're actually hearing kind of the same thing out of Aprilia right now, too, right? Yonone has come out and said that he is not focused on results right now, and Aleix Espargaró, his development is worthless.
Worthless.
I added that word here. But that's what it seemed like. It just seemed like he's not happy with the development that has happened with the motorcycle, if any has happened. And I mean, we've talked up Aleix a little bit before, in that he just seems to be able to ride anything. So maybe he's that rider that just gets dumbed down by Rob's tech tapes and goes faster.
We also talked a bunch of shit about Aleix. He's the rider who will override anything, but he can only get it so far anyway.
Yeah,
I mean, the guy doesn't have any actual results like to speak of. Like, he's been, you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have any podiums in GP. He has no wins in any Grand Prix class, in a world championship. Like, he's, from like a resume point of view, he has like the worst resume on the grid.
Like, shit, does he?
Yeah. I mean,
what about Hafeesh?
Yeah, I mean, Hafeesh didn't win anything.
And he hasn't been in GP as long as Aleix has.
Well, I mean, you could say Hafeesh has the worst one, but come on, that was Hafeesh is there because he fucking Jonas Folger like randomly got sick and that whole debacle happened.
Yeah.
Like other than Hafeesh, you could say Aleix potentially has one of the worst, if not the worst, outside Hafeesh's like resumes in GP.
Yeah, he
his
has
whole entire two podiums. GP.
Between one total. One in GP and one in Moto 2, and that's it. Between like an absurd number of starts, like more than 200 starts between all the championships.
Dude rode like a Pramac Ducati like in 2009.
Yeah. Was it even in the Pramac back then?
Yes, it was.
It was. Mm-hmm. But they were green, weren't they?
No, that bike wasn't green yet, but I know what you're talking about. That green bike was actually newer than that. When Depunier and Caparossi rode it, it was green.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. All right, let's transition over to our last rider to talk about, because I feel like it was supposed to be one of the big stories of Jerez, and there was a little bit of showing in first practice, maybe on Friday, but then we got squat. Jorge Lorenzo.
Yeah, keep your friends close, but keep your enemies closer. The exact plan is going perfect. It couldn't be going more perfectly according to the plan, which was take the one guy who could potentially beat Marquez, put him on a bike whose performance you can specifically control, and you lock in four more titles.
So do you think the mechanical difficulty was intentional? For him to not finish that race?
That's probably liable, but yes.
So a little too far. Maybe that was unnecessary, right? Because his results, and I mean, his confidence going into Cota was like, oh, I don't care because I told you I'm going to be fast at Jerez, right? The first three rounds are meaningless for Jorge.
Right.
So it was probably unnecessary. But now we get to Jerez and squat. Great.
He
scored points because other people crashed out.
I think the plan is going better than expected in a sense. They said, hey, look, we'll sign Jorge, and if he gets some wins and does well, great for the brand. And if push comes to shove, we can control and make sure and we can manufacture that Marquez continues to win. If we make his greatest rival the number two rider, we can, you know, they're not greatest rival, but his closest rival. And what they're saying is, hey, look at this. Fuck. It's like Ben Spies at Yamaha. You know what I mean? At some point, you're just like, holy shit, God. The dude is cursed.
It's exactly the same thing. I mean,
I don't know, man. I mean, I hear you, and I know HRC is evil, but I'm not quite ready to say they're that evil just yet. Damn, you make a compelling argument.
Changed my
mind,
Dennis.
I'm not saying they're evil. I'm just saying that they definitely sacrificed some babies to the gods to make sure that Lorenzo doesn't do well.
I'm not saying they're evil, but
when Melisandre burned that fucking chick on the stake for Stannis Baratheon, they thought it was cool.
That was like season 6, so no spoilers there. You're fine, everyone.
That was like season 4.
Was it that long ago?
That was days ago, man.
God damn. I can't even keep track. It's been so long.
Yeah, exactly.
We shouldn't say that. Dennis is going to bring
up Game of
Thrones.
I'm not saying that HRC is evil, but they definitely were in support of Shelbyville stealing the lemon tree.
Whoa. Whoa. That's too far. So, I mean, Dennis, so you don't think that you recognize that HRC is evil. You don't think that they're going this far.
Who do you think put that yellow lemon-shaped rock in front of that lemon?
Dennis, when is Jorge going to bring it around? When is he finally going to stop riding the RCV like an M1? Because I watched his crash in qualifying. It really looked like he just tried to carry pace through that corner like he shouldn't have, and it didn't work, and he crashed.
Well, so you think he's back to his old habits, even though he's had his stint on Ducati and figured that bike out?
It looks like he's just trying stuff, right? He's throwing everything at it, trying to figure out what works, and he hasn't found anything that works yet.
I mean, sure. I think I still have hope. I mean, because he's shown that he is able to eventually figure something out or a bike out. I think he still needs time, but I feel like he'll figure out the RC a lot sooner than he did Ducati GP.
I mean, yeah, it took him a year and a half and a new tank cover and a whole bunch of bitching from Domenicali and all that stuff for him to figure out the Ducati. So if he's still kind of ahead of the curve, except his results are so terrible.
They are. They are. I know. It's almost like his first year in Ducati as well. But I'm still holding out hope that I'm going to see a Lorenzo win on the Repsol Honda this season.
Actually, his results are worse than his first year on the Ducati. Because he got third in 2017 on the at Jerez.
Remember, he acted like it was a fucking win.
Yeah.
And some of those really, really poor, like 15th, 16th, whatever he had in Ducati, were in those rain races. This was like a dry, sunny Jerez. I mean, how many laps has he done around fucking in Spain in like nice weather at that track? You know what I mean? Like, it's not like some funky bike in the rain doesn't know what's happening and all of that stuff. I mean, that guy has ridden innumerable laps around that track his whole fucking life. That's one of his best tracks. There's a fucking corner named after him at that track.
Should we talk about Danny Pedrosa dry sack corner? God. No, but besides that, I actually, one of the reasons why my expectations of Jorge Lorenzo are higher than they were at Ducati, not just because he's had the Ducati learning experience, it's because he now has the supposed might of HRC behind him, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Ducati is the third largest factory on the grid, right? I expect them, and they've had problems with development since Casey Stoner was there, right? Essentially the entire time they've been in GP. I expect them to be able to fix problems for their riders slower than Honda and Yamaha. But now Jorge is at Honda, right? I expect Honda to give him the right setup and give him the right bikes for him to be able to have a podium challenging motorcycle. And it really seems like they're either Kev is right and they're not doing that and it's on purpose, or Jorge's just dropping the ball here and not able to take advantage of it.
I'm more inclined to think that it's more on Lorenzo's side. I mean, yeah, he needs to find the right setup and stuff like that, but I think he's just, nothing that worked for him on the M1 or the Ducati obviously are going to work for the RC. So he's trying to come up with a new baseline for him on this bike, and that's just going to take time, in my opinion. Not so much anything that HRC can rush or develop for him. He just needs to figure it out on his own.
It's going to be funny if it's just a confidence thing and he needs a new gas tank, or he needs like a different carbon fiber swing arm, or maybe just some other random one other part that that gets him over this hump to stop finishing 12th.
Maybe. Right.
Goddamn. All right, I'm done talking about people finishing 12th position.
Right, who fucking cares?
Who fucking cares? Goddamn. Right.
Who?
Is there anything else you guys want to cover here? Am I forgetting anything?
D's nuts.
I'm good.
We could always go to the gram for some questions.
People all right, want us to cover. Let's spend 10 minutes on the gram.
Hold on, let me go over there, because I did post amongst many of my Simpsons Lemon of Troy episode memes, which I was going off and on about today. We're going to pull it up. Picture Fabio, 51 comments on what we should talk about. Kyle Wyman wants to know why we're not telling him about the podcast until the day of. He'll be on next week, Kyle. We'll be talking about all kinds of cool stuff. MotoGP Silly says only Fabio, which I absolutely agree with. We should only be talking about Fabio. Owen Johnson wants to talk about Buster.
Where is Buster?
Buster is asleep in the other room.
In the attic? In the other box of blue Rossi Finger shirts that you're hiding up there.
Yeah, no, those do not exist. If you have one of those, you are among the select few OGs.
Kev, we're going to give away that shirt, right?
Yes.
All right. We just need to figure out some awesome thing to make you guys do for that shirt.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Wasn't it like a medium, too?
Yes.
Yeah, cover a lot of bases there. A lot of people.
I'm looking for a good one here.
I know, I'm trying to fill space.
Fan theories and why Fanati is so inconsistent on his return to the class he has dominated in the past.
Romano Fanati has dominated a class in the past?
Well, in the sense that he has the most wins in Moto 3. He's always been a winner, now looking incredibly inconsistent. The main thing is he never won the championship because he was always inconsistent. He would be really, really fast, or he wouldn't do well, or he would try to fight someone on track at speed. So I don't necessarily think that's a major point.
Does he have the most wins out of anyone, or just of active
the most
riders?
Total wins. He has the record for the most total. I remember when he was broken, I'm like, wow, what a weird record to actually
have. He only has 10 wins. Like, that's a terribly low number.
Right, because everyone leaves the moment they do well.
High turnover rate, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, it's Fanati, right? He's a fucking head case. He spends too much time doing other things. And I'm not surprised at all that he's having very inconsistent season.
A strangely large number of people are wanting to know if Repsol is sabotaging Jorge, which is funny.
Kev says yes. Dennis says no. I say they don't need to.
Will Harry and Megan name their new baby Fabio, Valentino, or Buster?
Wait, who?
If the royal couple, Harry and Megan.
Buster.
Will they name them Buster? She better.
Wait, what do you think Kiara is going to name her child?
We all know who the real baby is and who the real royal baby is, and that's Mr. Buster.
Wait, you saw that Kiara is pregnant and Maverick and Redding dodged a bullet?
That is a bullet and a half dodged by both those homeboys. God damn.
Yeah, I don't think those two are not at a good time in their life to have a kid. No. Dovizioso, world's fastest dad.
Yeah.
Thumbs up for that one, right? He could have he has three kids, I think, at this point. Doing great. Even Cal Crutchlow, like, good time
that
in his life.
That chick is right in the danger zone, though. That's the problem. You guys know what I mean by the danger zone?
No, I don't. Explain it to me,
okay,
please.
So, like, we all know this. Let me talk about the danger zone for a minute, guys. Let's get serious. I'm going to pour myself a little more water with the danger zone. So, because in our culture, we have this weird thing where, like, everyone's got to go to college, everyone has to graduate and have to have their career, but also, you don't want to be an old mom because no one likes an old mom. And if you're not married by the time you're 30, well, what's wrong with you, right? Everyone knows a girl or is a girl, because a lot of female listeners and everywhere in between. It's all good. And like, if you're like a 28-year-old girl, your grandma's like, when are you going to get married? Your aunt's like, when are you getting married? When are you having a baby? And you're like, fuck, I just graduated college. I went in my career for 3 years. I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing. So there's this moment where two completely contradictory cultural pressures on women attach themselves to the woman. The idea that you must have a career, be successful, be independent, and have done something, which requires most of the first years of your 20s. But you also, no one wants to be an old mom. No one wants to be an old hag. And if you're not married by the time you're 30, no one's ever going to love you forever. So there's this danger zone period, 27, 28, 29, where your hormones are going crazy, you're still pretty hot, right? You have your career and you see the window closing and you are ready to straight procreate with anything because it's the danger zone, son. How many of us know someone who had a girlfriend who was like 28 years old, they broke up, and the bitch is pregnant with the first dude that they fucking hook up with like 3 weeks later? That shit's on Instagram. They're like, on their fucking Facebook, right? We've all seen that shit. That's the danger zone, son. It's not even their fault. We have two different cultures completely pushing on girls all at the same time with these crazy unrealistic expectations. And what happens? Their head is spinning. Their hormones are going crazy. Three quarters of their body is like, yo, you gotta shit out a baby. That's why you exist, because all our bodies are our DNA reproducing machines. And then the girl's brain is like, but I gotta be a sassy, independent woman. I gotta be Beyonce. I gotta be Adele. Lemonade, son. 25, son. And then at the same time, you're like going crazy, and those chicks are ready to fuck and get pregnant. That's the danger zone, son. Kiara is dead in the middle of it. That personal trainer, she got fucking pregnant by her personal trainer. If you are a personal trainer, do not train any chicks between the ages of 27 and 30. They are coming for for your seat, and they don't even know it.
She's actually a little ahead of the curve. She's 25.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, right. But Kev,
you know what I mean. It's not a hard fast limit. It's like a it's
a guideline.
It's a
curve.
It's a guideline.
I am
it's
pleasantly surprised how well put together that whole train of thought was. Like, you covered all bases there, offended absolutely no one, and represented all sides. Like, that was fucking amazing.
Right.
And on that revelation, I think it's
of
time
the
to
danger
end.
Zone.
Yeah,
the danger good. Zone's rough. It's a rough time. It's solid. You gotta be careful. And you know what? It's solid.
I recognize the hardship. I recognize my inability to relate to that.
Right.
I'm male. I don't have any pressure. Well, actually, I mean, Luca's sitting out there. All her friends have had kids, and all her it's a rough time. I'll agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really know what it feels like.
Right, you know what it feels like? You only have to date a chick who's like 20 or 30 and like at a family gathering and the chick's not around. They're like, when are you going to propose? If you're going to propose, let me know. We got grandma's ring ready for you. The pressure starts being auxiliary on you too. That was the main reason I didn't date anyone in the danger zone. Not because I didn't want kids, because I don't, because kids are totally like having a child is like living with a drug addict that you're biologically forced to love. It's I don't want to answer questions from fucking old bitches about when I'm going to propose. Stay out of the danger zone for everyone.
Yeah, I've had to answer some of those questions, but it's more, it's less the
you
danger zone.
You have, bitch, you know Luca's grandma is so fed up with why you haven't cut your hair or proposed already. Mm-hmm.
They're in Europe. It's great. They're really far away. But no, yeah, the whole being together for more than a decade has increased those questions.
Correct.
We'll go with that.
You know what happens when you're in the danger zone too? You've always fucking procreate with the opposite person that you're supposed to. It's never someone
really?
You're with. You never ever do it right because you're not thinking straight. You know how like we all like. You know how there's always that dude who has like no like the worst stringy facial hair and the worst stringy stash and he's like skinny and nothing, and that dude is always breaking hearts and bitches are always after him, and you're like, what do you see in that guy? Because it's like this weird, like Arthur Schopenhauer talked about this, like in The World as Will and Representation, that you want to procreate with someone who is on the opposite end of the spectrum of you in many things, so that the evened out child that you have has the best of both, and you try to negate the worst.
I can see that.
So you have this idea,
yeah.
Right? That like, but the so inherently the person you decide to procreate with, by the very nature of your decision to have a child, is the worst possible person to actually spend the rest of your life with, because they're actually the person who has the most differences with you, and it's going to cause the most friction due to that. So if you desire to have a baby with someone, guys, that's actually who you do not want to spend the rest of your life with.
Yeah, I mean, they said opposites attract, but no one ever said that opposites stay together for the rest of your life.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
That's why it's like the honeymoon phase, you know? It's fucking awesome there. But you don't want to pop a kid out during the honeymoon phase of a relationship.
No, so if you're in the honeymoon phase and in the danger zone, that is bad news bears, guys. That's like an exponential multiplier.
God damn.
You know how, like, if you're in a car going, like, you know, 20 miles an hour this way, and you're in a car going 20 miles an hour this way, it's not, it's like, you know, exponential. It's four times the impact because of like force, you know, equal and opposite reaction. If you're in the danger zone and you want to procreate, I mean, the amount of just fucking going all the way back to my brother and his child support, here's what's going to happen. You're in the danger zone and you want to fucking, you're thinking to myself like, hey man, you guys are fucking, you're going good. No one has a condom. You're all good. And you're like, ah, God, I'm going to go. And she's like, I'm cool if you're cool. And you're like, I'm cool if you're cool. And so you just let it fly, right? Because biology takes over for a minute. That's the worst decision you can make. You're going to find yourself 18 years later getting ready to light $1,000 on fire because at least she doesn't get it. Or at least he doesn't get it. Or at least, like, you know what I mean? Goddamn.
Plus inflation. So it's going to be worse than that.
Plus inflation! So now you're literally, because you wanted to bust your nut once or you wanted to feel someone's nut, now you're having to account for how much money you're going to owe someone plus inflation for this terrible decision you made once.
Oh my god. Okay, no, I'm really cutting this off. Dennis is fucking too quiet. He's red. I can't tell.
This
if
is too
it's
real
camera.
For Dennis right now.
It's
I'm too getting real. Too real for him.
It's way too real for Dennis. He's got absolutely nothing to say.
It's only because I work in child support.
Yeah, yes. He knows. I'm right. I'm so right, aren't I? You know it. You know I'm right.
Cut it.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. This has been episode 118. Catch Writer's Law if you need legal help, especially if you're in the state of California. Cy and Lawyer Rub would love to speak with you. Catch us next week for a Moto America, maybe World Superbike Imola episode. And check out shop.brotogp.com for your Andre Iannone inside joke shirts for one more day. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. Peace.
Later.